All right, our next presenter is from NC State, Glenn Gulley. He's going to talk to you about population dynamics of ectoparasitic and endoparasitic nematodes in North Carolina.
Thank you, Dr. Kearns. So much of the focus of turf pathology is on fungal pathogens, or more precisely, sclerotinia, apparently. But nematodes are a major emerging issue in both North Carolina and the southeastern United States. For example, our disease clinic at NC State found that this year, of samples submitted, 11% were infected with root knot nematode, up from just 5% a year ago. One of the reasons nematodes are becoming more of an issue is our climate. North Carolina's transition zone state, meaning we have hot, humid summers and cold, dry winters. Because of this, we're able to grow both warm and cool season grasses, but neither grows optimally. And so both have to go through severe disease pressure throughout most of the year. The other area is our nematicide portfolio. While the number of nematicides available has increased greatly, we are still learning how to time their application appropriately. So there's a host of nematodes affecting turf grass. I'm only going to focus on two, Bulonolimus longicaudatus and Moidogyne species, what we're commonly referred to as sting and root knot nematode, respectively. Sting nematode is a migratory ectoparasite, meaning this nematode lives and feeds outside the roots, while root knot nematode is a sedentary endoparasite. This nematode lives and feeds inside the roots, and even sets up specialized feeding sites for female to mature and reproduce. Sting nematode is one of our most damaging nematodes in turf, even at low numbers. Its damage threshold is 1 to 10 nematodes per 500 cc soil. And so essentially this means if you've got it on your golf course, you're likely to have nematode disease issues. Root knot nematode isn't as damaging at low numbers. With the damage threshold of 500 nematodes per 500 cc soil, it can become a big issue if left unchecked. So sting nematode, let's figure out how to use the, there it is. Sting nematode is a large nematode with adults reaching about 3 millimeters in length. One of the reasons this nematode is so damaging is their long, thin stylet. They use this stylet to pierce into the roots, feeding on the root cells, and leaving the plant with a stunted, ineffective root system. Root knot nematode is also just as disruptive to the plant roots, whether it's the juveniles migrating through the plants, searching for feeding site, or here in the bottom picture where we see a female has hijacked 5 of the plant cells to just create her feeding site for reproduction. Here we have the distribution of sting and root knot nematode in North Carolina from a survey in 2012. Sting nematodes found predominantly in the eastern part of the state where soils tend to be sandier, while root knot nematodes found throughout the entire state from the mountains to the coast. This is consistent with its ability to survive in a wider variety of soils. However, sting nematode we tend to find in a wider variety of turf types, from home lawns to sod farms to golf courses, while root knot nematode tends to only be found in golf course samples. So this is how damage tends to present itself in a putting green. Damage tends to present as brown, thin patches, and if it's severe enough, you end up seeing turf death. Damage is most severe during the summer months when the weakened root system is more susceptible to heat or drought stress. This is just another example of thinning. It's especially evident down here in the corner where we see a considerable amount of turf loss. These are just an example of how important nematicides are. The image on the left is untreated, and you can see that there is very considerable damage to that green, resulting in reduced playability. However, with appropriate timing and appropriate use of nematicides, we see a great increase to both turf quality, uniformity, and density. Because nematodes feed on the roots, they feed on the roots, and chemicals are very important in preventing this. Nematode feeding results in thin, weak, stunted roots, as shown in sample number 5, which was a control, where nematicides are not used to control the nematodes. However, when we do use nematicides, as in the other 5 samples, we see a much denser, longer root system. Finally, we have sting and root knot nematode damage on a fairway. It manifests very similarly to the putting green, with the brown patches up on the hill the most severe damage. So the objectives of my study were to observe and record population dynamics of sting and root knot nematode in North Carolina on a monthly basis over several years, and to observe and record the population dynamics of these nematodes at various depths within the soil column. The study was carried out at 4 golf courses. The blue star is Greensboro, North Carolina, and that's where our root knot samples came from. While the red stars are sting nematode populations from Raleigh, Rocky Mount, and Wilson. 3 greens were sampled at each course, with 6 cores taken from the perimeter of each green. The cores were taken as deep as possible, up to about 30 centimeters. Then they're sectioned into 3 10-centimeter sections. Samples are then brought back to the lab where they're mixed and the nematodes are extracted using a modified sieving and sugar centrifugation technique. And the nematodes are counted via light microscopy by myself. So the first data I'll show is a root knot nematode from Bermuda grass. Just to quickly set up the chart, the y-axis is the number of nematodes counted per 500 cc soil. The x-axis is the month sampled. And the bars are going to be the counts from at each depth. However, in root knot, we only found nematodes in the top 10 centimeters. This makes a lot of sense. For root knot nematode, you're going to see the eggs in the soil. They're going to hatch, and then they're going to immediately migrate into the roots. There's not going to be much time spent just in the soil. We also only found stage 2 juveniles in the soil. For root knot nematode, most of their life is spent in the roots. And the only 2 life stages outside are going to be the stage 2 juveniles, which will just hatch and will migrate in, and then any adult males which have made it, and then will move back outside the roots afterwards. The other thing to point out here is the cyclical pattern. We see populations are the lowest counts during the spring months. They will climb and peak in the summer and then drop off pretty quickly as we head back through the fall. So the rest of the data will be sting nematode populations from those 3 courses. The first here is the Bermuda grass course out of Rocky Mount. The chart's set up exactly the same, except we are starting to see vertical differences in populations. The gray bar is the top 10 centimeters, the red bar the middle, and the black bar the bottom 10 centimeters. The line is the aggregate counts of all 3 depths at each month, and it's just to kind of show the rise and fall of the populations throughout the year. It'll only be up here briefly. But if you focus on the line, we see the populations are lowest in the spring, will rise and peak in mid to late summer, and then drop off pretty quickly as we head into the fall, similar to that of root knot nematode. Here I just want to draw your attention to the red and black bars. So we originally anticipated that sting nematode would be found in the top 10 centimeters nearest the root zone for feeding purposes. And we see that in the spring months, populations tend to be in that top 10 centimeters. But as we transition into the summer, populations start to dive deeper, as represented by the increase in the size of the red and the black bars. While this is unexpected, it's maybe very significant for how golf course superintendents manage their turf. Next, we have a population from Crete and Bentgrass in Wilson, North Carolina. Looking at the line again before it disappears, populations are lowest in the spring. They rise pretty quickly up into the summer, mid to late summer, but then they don't drop off significantly until we hit the really cold temperatures in January and February. The depths are also kind of a similar story. Populations are nearest the surface in the spring months, indicated by the gray bar. The nematodes then will move much deeper throughout the summer months, and then as we transition from the summer into the fall and winter, populations start to rise back up to the surface again. Finally, we have the third population from Crete and Bentgrass in Raleigh. The line says the exact same story. Populations are lowest in the spring, counts are lowest in the spring. They'll rise up throughout the summer, and then they don't drop off until we really hit those cold snaps and freezes in January. In the depths, again, we see populations are nearest the surface in the spring. However, they do tend to, at this particular course, dive deeper a little bit earlier in early summer. And then they'll slowly start to rise up after about September, nearest the surface as we head into the winter. If we take the population from that Raleigh course and separate it into its life stages, male, female, and juvenile, most of the population is actually adults throughout the year. The ratio of males to females is split roughly 50-50, which is important because this nematode requires both sexes to reproduce. We also see peaks of juveniles in the spring and fall, and these correlate with an increase in the adults about a month later, about as long as it takes for a sting nematode to mature. The one thing that did not put up here is that most of the juveniles were found in the top 10 centimeters soil column only. And none were deeper than the middle 10 centimeters. So for quick summary, root knot nematode, the populations increased in late spring and decreased in the fall. We're only found the top 10 centimeters. While sting, we saw the same trend increase in the spring, but they didn't decrease significantly until late fall, early winter, and populations were found much deeper than the top 10 centimeters. So why does this all matter? Through this research, I think I've found two areas to help us improve nematode management in North Carolina and elsewhere. The first is sampling. When I first showed up at NC State, our field program was measuring nematode samples to about 10 centimeters. And this seemed to be about the common practice for golf courses throughout as well. However, this data shows we may be missing a majority of the population, especially in the summer months. So therefore, I've started to suggest that we sample at least 15 centimeters deep, if not a little bit deeper during the summer. So that way we have a more accurate idea of what our populations are actually like and can manage them more appropriately. The other area is the proper timing of nematicide application. So pesticide movement is very difficult, but important. If we want to control the nematodes, we need to be able to get the nematicide to them. Take abamectin, for example. It's probably one of the most commonly applied nematicides and is the active ingredient in both Divanem and Avid. In 2016, Dr. Gannon showed there's minimal movement of abamectin in the field beyond 2.5 centimeters, even with use of surfactants. This is because abamectin has a high KOC value, and once it binds tightly, it's no longer bioavailable. A study in our lab has shown similar results. Mr. Hutchins, who you heard from earlier, has shown that limited movement of fungicides beyond 10 centimeters, even with 2.5 centimeters of water watered in afterwards. While he was not working with nematicides directly, I included the below KOC table to show that they do have similar values, and so the nematicides we could anticipate would behave similarly in the same conditions. This is a problem because if we can't move the nematicides beyond that top 10 centimeters, we're not going to be able to manage these nematodes and knowing that they are below that top 10 centimeters in the summer. So my data, combined with those pesticide movement studies, suggests that earlier applications are likely to be more effective. I'm suggesting we start to apply nematicides as early as May and April, much earlier than a lot of courses previously were applying. This is because nematodes will be nearest the surface, and so we'll be able to get the nematicides to them. And it's also beneficial because populations are at the lowest in the spring, and so we'll hit them before populations really start to increase. Another area to consider would be fall applications. The data show that populations are starting to rise as we up near the surface as we exit the summer into the fall. This may be an opportune time to try and manage those high winter populations when the grasses are less active. So in conclusion, root knot nematode was observed only in the top 10 centimeters of soil profile, while sting nematode was observed much deeper, especially in the summer months when a majority of the populations were below 20 centimeters. Sting population numbers are also were found to be very high even into early winter. And so therefore, management is reliant upon applying nematicides early before populations start to increase, and nematodes move deeper outside of the range of those nematicides. With that, I'd like to thank my committee, and my advisor, Dr. Jim Kearns, the lab for all their help with sampling, and I'd be happy to take any questions if we have time.
Time for a couple questions.
Any idea how many generations you potentially have in a year?
The question was, how many generations do we have? We actually don't know that. Looking at when we looked at the slide of the adults and how long, like how the population stayed so much higher than the juveniles, we're starting to think that they may survive considerably longer, but I don't know the generations exactly.
Do you have any soil temperature data from the site at this depth over the summer?
So the question was whether we had soil temperature. Yeah, we do have the data, we just haven't been able to look at it yet.
Anything else? All right.
Thank you.